Dan Caton is an astronomer and astrophysicist at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. And one night, on his way back from a day trip to nearby Asheville, about 2 hours away, Dan thought he would pull off onto a viewing spot on the side of the road and check out this place called Brown Mountain.
So on the way back, it's dark. I thought, well, I'll just stop. You know, just look out for an hour or something. And I did that. And at some point, I saw this, I don't know how I even noticed it, maybe halfway up in the sky, a bright star-like light. Brighter than Venus, brighter than any normal planet or star you would see in the sky. It just appeared for a few seconds, several seconds, and then dissipated. It could have been a satellite, but a satellite moves while you're looking at it, so probably was not a satellite. Occasionally, you'll see a meteor coming straight at you. Very rare. But one that bright would have left the meteor train blowing vapor, gas, and I didn't see anything like that. So, what was that? I have no idea.
Dan Caton is, by his nature, a skeptic. He's a scientist. He wants proof. He wants data sets. But practically right there in Dan's backyard is a mystery that has been dogging him for years and bringing spectators to the hills of North Carolina. If only Dan could tell them what it was they were seeing. I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. This episode was produced in partnership with Visit North Carolina. And we are headed to the mountains of Western North Carolina, where for more than a century, people have witnessed unusual displays of shimmering and sometimes seemingly exploding lights. Are they the lanterns of ghosts, UFOs, illuminated swamp gas, or something else entirely? We follow Dan's quest to get to the bottom of the Brown Mountain lights after this. People have described them as flickering candles. Others as these exploding balls of fire. Sometimes they appear yellow, white, or even blue. In 1982, one man claimed he'd even touched one, and he said it felt like putting his finger into an electrical socket.
Some of them are firework-like. Some of them are very obscure lights falling off the edge of the mountains or the terrain there. Others are rising globs of light. There are different descriptions depending on different reports.
This is Dan Caton again. Dan doesn't come across as your kind of stereotypical academic. He's got chin-length gray hair dyed with blue and purple streaks. And he says he first heard about the Brown Mountain lights decades ago when he first started working at Appalachian State.
I had a student in intro astronomy say that he had seen them and, in fact, had recorded them on his camcorder. So that was even before smartphones that far ago.
Even then, the lights were legendary. Some claimed they were mentioned in Cherokee folklore, explained as the lanterns of ghosts looking for dead loved ones after a battle. Dan says this connection is pretty unsubstantiated. What is definitely true is that by at least the early 1900s, sightings of these lights started to kick into high gear. In February 1913, the Charlotte Observer floated a few theories. My personal favorite was that a moonshiner was lighting kites on fire to scare people away from his illegal booze-making operation. This is fairly plausible. Still, there were so many sightings that same year that in 1913, the U.S. Geological Survey came down and did their own investigation to try and debunk the lights. Their conclusion was pretty anticlimactic. They said people were just seeing the headlights of trains that ran through town.
Although it was pointed out that there was a big flood down there that took the train tracks out for a while and the lights were still reported.
But Dan, being a scientist, he decided he wanted to look into this for himself. So Dan got some equipment from the college and set out to see the lights. And Dan did see some lights. He saw a lot of them, actually.
Years ago, there was a light approaching us from the northeast, and it just was rising straight up. And so you're just seeing it go vertical as it's getting closer, and you're seeing the, you know, the height of it above the ground.
The problem was, they never ended up being the lights he was trying to see.
And finally, it got a little lateral motion, and we could see its blinking beacon light. It was a commercial craft probably coming from the D.C. area somewhere, but that fooled me. And one time I looked at mysterious lights moving along through the bushes and the trees a few hundred yards away, and after the leaves drop, I saw that was the extension of the gravel road. So, you know, you have to be careful of what you jump at. I would say 90% of the reports are bogus. They're misidentifications of natural or man-made lights.
By the mid-2000s, Dan was getting a little fed up with all of this.
I made dozens of trips, not seen anything. I was getting pessimistic and then cynical. And I just wasn't that interested anymore.
Dan was getting to the point where he didn't really think the lights existed at all, outside of people spotting headlights or cell phone towers or other man-made things. And he said as much in an interview with an Associated Press reporter in 2005. But after the story was published, Dan got a flood of emails, people sharing more sightings, more experiences. A lot of them were the same old, same old. But a few of them made him think.
But a couple of them were from people who didn't see them 1,000 feet across the gorge, but they saw them 20 feet away in the parking lots. You know, that's not something you're going to really get fooled by. And they have no reason to lie. I don't think they were lying. They just saw these weird lights. And it seemed like maybe there was some physics going on we could figure out. So I kind of got back in the game.
In 2012, the county held a symposium on the Brown Mountain Lights. It hosted talks from scientists like Dan, as well as folks offering more out-of-this-world explanations, people like paranormal investigators. Over the course of the conference, Dan met some local naturalists and geologists who had also been intrigued by the lights, and together they formed a sort of scientific working group. One of them had a key hookup. They knew someone with a weekend house overlooking Brown Mountain. So the group got permission to set up a camera. They were hoping that if they were able to get footage of the gorge every single night, at some point, they'd capture hard evidence of these lights.
We started recording the night, a whole sequence, time lapse. I would connect to that computer over the internet and start that every night. Every night. Rain or shine.
And every morning, Dan would upload a sped-up version of these videos to YouTube.
We added a second camera there at that site because cameras have defects. So if you see something in both cameras, then it's probably real. And so we really didn't see much of anything. One night, July 16-17 of 2016, that night, we did see something, and I brought over my colleagues and said, look at this thing.
Hang on, I'm going to watch the video. I've never seen this before, so let's see. Okay, 18 seconds. Brown Mountain Lights, camera 1B, July 16-17, 2016. It's bright. What the hell is that? They're like these flares. What? It goes by really quick. That's mysterious.
Plane streak, star streak. Those don't move. That's the time we had camera at 1A and 1B. You know, they were both running, they both saw it.
This was the smoking gun Dan was looking for. This sighting, he said, was a true anomaly. What could have caused it? The group ran through some explanations. Maybe it was illuminated swamp gas.
There are some wet areas on Brown Mountain, some marshes. And one of our group took a jar and captured some swamp gas and lit it. But it's just not energetic enough. Now, what lights it?
Dan's current favorite hypothesis is something called ball lightning.
So ball lightning is a rare phenomenon that has been recorded over more than a century. And these sports ball-sized lumps of light, I don't know, glowing gas, whatever, appear indoors or out. And how nature does that, we don't know.
There have been various sightings of ball lightning throughout history, including one from Tsar Nicholas II, who claimed that a lightning ball flew into his room one night. But the truth is, scientists have no idea how it works or what causes it. Whatever the case, this video got interest in the Brown Mountain lights humming again. It kicked off a wave of news articles about it, and it got some momentum. The group thought, okay, maybe we can collect some more evidence, get some more sightings on tape, compare when they show up to various atmospheric conditions, and see if there are connections that can be made. Like, maybe the lights only appear during thunderstorms. That could be really useful information. But then, nothing.
But we really didn't see anything more after that. So I got kind of disinterested again.
Since that sighting in 2016, the group had to take their cameras down. They were getting old and falling apart. They tried to find new spots to put them, new technology to use, but they ran into some logistical hurdles there. Beyond all of that, Dan says it just feels like he's kind of in limbo with the whole thing.
It's just like studying UFOs. You can't say, well, let's go out tonight and look for UFOs. No, they're random. And they're seen by people who aren't experienced observers. And so it's very much the kind of same kind of thing. So I don't know. That's what we need to figure out. But, I mean, how do you study that? I don't know. I wish there were a clear path forward.
This all might seem a bit circular, like Dan just found himself back where he started. But that's not quite right. There's a key difference. He's now convinced that there is something to the Brown Mountain lights. It is not just light pollution. It is not just headlights. There is something out there. We just don't know what it is. So Dan encourages people to go out and try to spot the lights themselves. He recommends familiarizing yourself with the appearance of man-made lights and downloading an app on your phone like Plane Finder that can help you identify if you're seeing an aircraft. But then he says, you're just going to have to look.
Educate yourself. Take your app with you. Take binoculars. Follow up. When you see that little dot disappear, look over there with binoculars and see if you can see anything. But I really would hope to get some close-up reports.
For now, the Brown Mountain lights remain a mystery. They draw thousands of visitors every year, people hoping to catch a glimpse, to have just a little brush with the unknown. And Dan still hopes to solve the mystery. He thinks that won't take anything away from it.
If we figure it out, it doesn't end the mystery that much. I mean, people still want to see it. The advantage is, if we figure it out, we could predict it. Good science usually yields more questions than answers. You answer it, but now you got five more questions about how does that work. And so that's what keeps us in business and always will. We just don't understand that much.
There are two main places where you can go to try and spot the Brown Mountain lights. There's Wiseman's View, which overlooks Linville Gorge, and there is the Brown Mountain Overlook on North Carolina Highway 181. If you see anything good, especially at close range, send it along to Dan. We would love for him to get a second chance to work on this. And if you want to view the lights from home, we will post a link to the YouTube video we talked about in the episode description. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. This episode was produced by
Amanda McGowan.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Baudelaire,
Gabby Gladney,
Johanna Mayer.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There's a link in our episode description. And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time.